Hello, good morning everybody. So thank you very much, Hugues, and other people from the Collège de France for inviting me. I mean, it's always a great pleasure to come here, and I'm really looking forward to all the discussion we will have today. I mean, as Edith said, I mean, ecosystems are a really, I mean, important notion in biology, and it's really important to get a kind of broad overview of the living world. And personally, I mean, I was trained in molecular biology and in genetics, and today I will try to talk about ecosystems. So, I mean, I apologize. I mean, I'm not also a specialist about ecosystems. But what I really like with biology is that we are looking at various scales and how one scale, like the molecular scale, can act on populations and can act on the external environments and different non-living molecules, for example. And this is really what I like with biology, that we are looking at various scales and how they interact together. And with my question today, which is about gene drives and the risk that gene drive can contaminate other species, you will see that this is really like one question, but to try to tackle this question, you need to study many different fields of biology and even immunology, which I'm not a specialist also. So you will see, I mean, I hope you will enjoy my presentation. So before starting with a CRISPR-based gene drive, I would like just to give you a broad description of what is a CRISPR. So I guess all of you, most of you know what it is. But so CRISPR is a method which targets DNA. You can have a target in the DNA, which is a special sequence, and it will cut the DNA. So it seems like a simple technique, but it's really a revolution in biology because it can be used for many, many different things, and it's very easy to use. So it means that you can cut DNA, you can copy and paste DNA as you like, and it's not difficult compared to previous techniques. So CRISPR means cluster regulatory interspaced short palindromic repeats. So there are specific sequences which were first identified in a bacteria, and people didn't really know what they were, but many studies tried to understand the function of these specific sequences. And it was found that there are a specific mechanism used by bacteria which helps them to detect and destroy virus DNA. So it's a specific mechanism which has evolved in bacteria, but nowadays people use it to manipulate any type of living organism. So how does it work? So you need a protein which is called Cas9. So this is represented here. And so this protein will have inside the molecule a guide RNA. And the the 5' sequence of the guide RNA can be any sequence. And so people can design the sequence they want for this guide RNA. And this sequence will recognize a target sequence which will have the corresponding sequence in the DNA. And The Cas9 and the guide RNA together, when they recognize such a site in the DNA, they will cut the DNA at this specific site. So this guide RNA, I mean, it's important to remember for my presentation. So you specify it by adding a specific sequence, and then there is a PAN, a special protospacer adjacent motif, which will be also a part of the DNA that is recognized, with the first nucleotide, which can be any thing, so A, T, C, or G, and then you should have G and G. So with this complex, so a protein and a guide RNA, you can cut a specific DNA sequence. So before, we had other tools to cut DNA, for example, restriction enzymes, zinc finger nuclease, or transcription activator-like effector nuclease, TALENs. So there were different methods. And what is really efficient with this new method is that you need to just synthesize a specific guide RNA with a sequence, and it's much faster. And also, it has been shown that it works in all the species which have been tested so far. So once you cut the DNA, you can have repair by the cell, and so you will have specific mutation at the position you targeted in the genome. So you can have, when it repairs, it will create a new mutation. What you can do also, if you cut the DNA, while you cut the DNA, you also add a piece of DNA which has flanking regions which are homologous to the blue parts flanking the cut site. And so then, during the repair mechanism, by homologous recombination, you will get directed repair. You can get a new sequence which will be made based on your repair template. So you can change a sequence into your sequence of interest. So these are the two main approach in which CRISPR is used. And so with the first approach, where you just cut and you simply let the cell repair by itself, you can get various types of mutations. So here is a target site with the PAM site here in red. And so you can see that you can get deletions and also insertions. So you can create mutants at a specific site of interest. So this technique is used by many labs nowadays, and it's a really good tool in which we now can do genetics in species in which it was not possible before. So here I'm showing you one example with butterflies in Agrolis vanillae. So you inject the protein and also your guide RNA into the developing butterflies. And for example, if you target a gene called OPTIX, which is involved in the formation of the orange pigment, you can get almost a fully black wing, except these white patches here. So it's really very efficient. And here, with another gene, WNT-A, which is involved in the determining the border of the different domains on the wings, you get you alter the pattern of the wing. So CRISPR is also used on applied biology, and because you can really target specific genes. So here is a recent slide where you see all the different numbers of genes which have been targeted and modified we're using CRISPR. And so it allows people who develop new varieties to be much more efficient, because you can really get exactly the mutation of interest in a specific variety that you already have. There are also applications in the biomedical science. So there are ongoing clinical trials using CRISPR to try to, it's a kind of a gene therapy. And there are two main approaches. So one approach is in vivo and one approach ex vivo. So in vivo, people are trying to repair genes which are present within the patient. And so nowadays, there are trials with retina disease, because then you can specifically modify the genes only in the retina cells, which is a small part of the body. And then CRISPR has potentially a lot of applications on cells which you can remove from the body and then put back into the patient. So this is the ex vivo approach, where cells are taken from the patient, genes are modified in the lab using CRISPR, and then cells are transferred back to the patient. So this can work for specific types of disease, like disease which affect the blood, for example. So one thing to know about CRISPR, which is important to keep in mind, is that all these applications of CRISPR would not have been possible if people didn't do fundamental research. CRISPR was really identified because people were interested in mechanisms of bacteria, how bacteria are resistant to virus. I mean, it looks like it's not an important question. Who cares about bacteria? I mean, of course, here we care. But so it's a good example to show to people that it's really important to do fundamental research, because sometimes we find things which could have very important applications. So before, we had like the stack polymerase to amplify DNA, which was made possible because people studied bacteria which live in very hot environments. Studying other types of bacteria made the possibility of discovering restriction enzymes. And then by studying jellyfish, it was made possible to make the tissue fluorescent with proteins, which was a very big advance also for life imaging. And nowadays, we have CRISPR, which is really a revolution. And this is, because people studied virus resistance in bacteria. So now I will go to GeneDrive. So GeneDrive is, in French, is called forçage génétique. So it's a new technique which, was discussed. GeneDrive made it possible to apply it in a better, more efficient way. So usually when you have a normal reproduction, each individual, when you have sexual reproduction, will produce gametes. And if you think about a diploid individual, so for each pair of chromosomes, only one of them will go into the gamete. Okay, so you have one gamete will have a 50% of chance to have the black chromosome and 50% of chance to have the green chromosome. So this means that if you look over many generations, if you look at one type of chromosome, you have one chance out of two to have this chromosome transmitted to the next progeny. What is different with gene drive is that it changes the way chromosomes are transferred to the next generation, so that one diploid individual will be more likely to transfer the chromosome which carries a gene drive, so here's a blue chromosome, and so most of the gametes will have this blue chromosome. And so if you look at several generations, you can see that here's the red chromosome which contains the gene drive will be present in all the population. So theoretical model shows that if you put only a few individuals which have a chromosome carrying a gene drive, after less than 1,000 generations, all the individuals should be contaminated with this gene drive. So gene drive uses CRISPR, and here you can probably recognize the different partners for CRISPR. And what is special with gene drive is that it makes all these partners be all together and act on themselves as a loop. So I will explain better. So here you have the DNA, okay? Here you have the guide RNA, and here the Cas9 protein. And so gene drive makes all these partners be combined all together at one site within a genome. So you have on one part of the genome what is called a gene drive cassette. So this cassette will contain the Cas9 gene, okay, the gene which will be producing the Cas9 protein. It also contains a gene which encodes the guide RNA. You can also add a cargo gene if you want to add up a gene that you want to spread in a population, but you don't have to. And then you also add the flanking region here, which flank the cut site, which is present in your normal target population. So here it means that you have all together at one site. And so if you have a chromosome which contains this gene drive cassette, the Cas9 protein will be produced, the guide RNA will be produced, together they will recognize the cut size, they will cut, and the cut will be repaired, and it will be repaired using the flanking regions of the Cas9 cassette, so that at the end, you will have the gene drive cassette which will be present on the other copy, on the other chromosome. So it's a mechanism for the gene drive cassette to copy itself on another chromosome. So with this, so you can have a conversion, so the copy mechanism can occur in the gonad, so that the individual will still be heterozygote for the gene drive chromosome, okay? But all the gametes will be with the gene drive cassette. Another possibility is that the conversion occurs in the zygote, and in which case all the cells of the individual will have the two copies of the gene drive on each chromosome. So there are many different applications of gene drive. So here I'm showing you a few of them. So the main one which is described in the media is the one for eradicating disease vectors, and especially malaria vectors, so eliminating mosquitoes. But it can have other applications. For example, it can be used to eradicate invasive pest species. In New Zealand, people are trying to see whether they can use it to eradicate invasive black rats, which are threatening different endemic species in New Zealand. You can also use it to spread mildly deleterious mutations in different target populations. So for example, here, one possibility which has been suggested is to reduce the height of invasive weeds so that they are not as competitive as the native ones and as the native plants. And you can also imagine that you can use it for conservation biology to save endangered species by spreading beneficial mutations. So here one example is that these leopard frogs, they are affected by pathogenic fungi. And we know one type of genes that could make them resistant to these fungi. So we could, for example, try to spread them in these populations. So this technique so far has been done only in the laboratory, so there has not been any release in the wild, okay? So it's being developed in the laboratory. So CRISPR papers were first published in 2012, and the first gene drive organisms using CRISPR were published in 2015. So you can see it's a very recent technique, only a few years. So it's being developed in the lab, and so far, we don't know when it will be applied in the wild. So the first paper was a paper where they showed that gene drive can work in Drosophila melanogaster flies. So here what they use is a gene drive cassette, which contains a guide RNA, which will target the yellow gene. So it makes the flies yellow compared to their normal color. And it can be inherited with more than 95%, in more than 95% of the progeny. A second paper, which was published in the same year, was on mosquitoes, on Anopheles stephensi. And in this paper, they included cargo genes in the gene drive cassette. And these cargo genes can make antibodies which are against the malaria parasite. So it makes the mosquito resistant to a non-vector of malaria. Another paper, which was published on the same year on another species of mosquito, here uses another technique. Instead of using a cargo gene, here the gene drive cassette will insert at a specific site, which is a gene required for female fertility. And when the gene drive cassette inserts into the gene, it makes the female sterile, and so they cannot reproduce. And so if you have, but still this gene drive can spread through the male. And if you make models, you can see that after a while, the population will decrease and will be eliminated. And indeed, this is what can happen when they make cages with a lot of mosquitoes, and they put just a few individuals carrying the gene drive. So nowadays, I would say that there are two major applications of gene drive which are most advanced, which are more likely to be used in the future. The first one is on Drosophila suzukii, which is very close to Drosophila melanogaster. It's an invasive pest species which originates from Asia, and it invaded Europe and America since 2008. And it's, it causes a lot of problems because on its ovipositor, it has fine teeth which can break a fresh fruit, and then they insert their eggs into the fruit, and so they make the fruit rotten much faster than usual, and so they cause a lot of problems and a lot of loss for agriculture. Another application is with the vectors of malaria, so Anopheles mosquitoes. So it's also a system which is progressing quite rapidly, especially because there are a lot of money involved in this type of research with the project Target Malaria, which is financed by Bill Gates. So he puts a lot of money in this research. So what is novel about gene drive? So I told you that what is novel is that you have several pieces of DNA which are assembled together. Usually in bacteria, they were not put all together at a specific DNA site. So here you have the guide RNA, the gene encoding Cas9, and also the flanking regions, which are all put together. And what is different also is that you have eukaryote cis regulatory regions, which drive expression of the gene Cas9 and the guide RNA, compared to bacteria, where they have their own bacterial cis regulatory regions. So it means that we are one step closer to contamination to other species, because it makes like a small piece of DNA being quite potent. And this small piece of DNA can manipulate two of the three pillars of evolution. It can manipulate mutations, because instead of having mutation occurring randomly within the genome, here it will make mutation occur at the target site. And the mutation will be special. It will be the insertion of the gene drive cassette. And it also alters the transmission, because as I showed you, one individual which is a heterozygote will only produce chromosomes which will have the gene drive, so it biases transmission. And if you have a bias in a mutation and transmission, it means that even genes which are not so good, like for example a gene which makes a female sterile, can still spread into population and make the population go extinct. So I think it's potentially more effective than other biotechnologies because of its ease of use. I mean, you simply need to prepare a simple piece of DNA. It can change population quite rapidly within a dozen generations. And what is also quite important to have in mind is that it's a very new technique. So the regulatory environment is not prepared for this technique. And before, we didn't have such a technique, which is a molecular technique, which can have effects on ecosystems like that. So what are the risks? So there are different types of risks. So you can have molecular off targets. So it means that instead of having a mutation at the target site, you have mutation at other sites within a genome. You can have propagation to non-target population, non-target species. You can have also consequences for ecosystems. So if one population is eliminated, maybe it will affect other species which were dependent on this population. And then also people are developing countermeasures. If we think that the gene drive was not a good idea, we want to stop it. I mean, so far the countermeasures are still under development and we are not sure they would work. So today, I would like to focus on one risk, which I was interested in, especially, I mean, because I'm also a molecular biologist and a geneticist, which is a risk of propagation to non-target species. So this is my last part of my talk. So the risk of a gene drive contaminating a non-target species. And so this was a risk I was thinking of, but still, I mean, it involved a lot of parameters. So I was really happy that we could work together with Antoine Danchin, Pierre-Henri Gouillon, and Christophe Butt on this problem, because we could bring our expertise to try to see whether this contamination is possible and how it would occur and how likely it is. So together we come up with several events which have to happen for the gene drive to be to contaminate another species. So the first one is that you need to have the DNA to transfer from one species, from the target species, to another species. So this transfer can occur through hybridization with a closely related species, and it could also occur through horizontal transfer. So I will go through all these different steps after. Then once the DNA has been transferred to another species, the gene drive has to be expressed, okay? So the Cas9 gene and the guide RNA gene has to be expressed in the new host. The guide RNA and the CRISPR-Cas9 complex have to be active and to recognize the target and to cut in the new host. Then there should be flanking sequences around the cut site so that the gene drive cassette can copy itself to this specific cut site. Then you should have an immune probability here that the immune system does not reject Cas9 expressing cells. And then if all this machinery is present, and at the beginning you will have the gene drive cassette only in one individual or two individuals, so you need to have a probability so that the drive is not eliminated randomly, just the way, I mean, individuals will mate with each other, so that the drive will invade the population. So regarding the first parameter, so the risk of hybridization, so here I will just show you an estimation of this risk for the two main models in which gene drive is being developed. So Drosophila suzukii is originating from Asia, and there are two species in Asia which are close to Drosophila suzukii, Drosophila subpulcrella and Drosophila pulcrella. So they are really close to each other. And people who did genome sequencing, they could see that we know that there have been a recent introgression between Drosophila subpulcrella and Drosophila suzukii. And also in the laboratory, it was possible to create hybrids between subpulcrella and suzukii, and these hybrids are fertile. So it means that these species can hybridize. And this one is found in a temperate and a tropical climate. And so if we target suzukii in our temperate environment, I mean, if we find a way for them to be really confined to Europe or to America, maybe it will be okay. But if some of them migrate and go to Asia, it's possible that they will contaminate these other species. For Anopheles mosquitoes, so there is a complex of 8 different species, which are the Anopheles gambiae complex. And this complex of species is highly studied because people want to know whether there are hybridization between them, for example, for development of resistance. And these three are the ones which are targeted by the project Target Malaria. And there are three mosquitoes which are vectors of malaria. And it is known that genes from Arabiensis transfer to Gambiae and reciprocally. And for example, genes involved in resistance to insecticides. So we know that hybridization is possible between some of them. So all these species are morphologically indistinguishable. Okay, so they are very close to each other. So this is one part of the risk. The other risk is that it can transfer through horizontal transfer. So we know a lot of types of horizontal transfer. So here on this diagram, they put most of the horizontal transfer going from bacteria to eukaryotes. But we know also that there are genes in bacteria which come from eukaryotes, and you can also have horizontal transfer within eukaryotes. And horizontal transfers are usually detected when people sequence genomes. And within genomes, they will find a piece of DNA. And when they make a phylogeny, this piece of DNA will be more similar to species which are very far in the phylogeny. And that's how people find this type of events, this type of horizontal transfer. So these the pieces of DNA which are transferred through horizontal transfer can be, in general, about several KB. But we know cases in which pieces which are up to 150 KB, which got transferred from one plant species to another, or from one animal to another animal. So it can still be quite big. And a gene drive cassette is about several KB, so it's it can be transferred. So the genes which are transferred, which we can find in the phylogeny, are usually genes which have an effect and which make the species better adapted in some ways. So here is one example in aphids. So you can have aphids which are green or orange, and this is due to production of carotenoids. And carotenoids cannot be produced de novo by animals in general. And here what is special with P. aphis is that if you look at the enzyme involved in a carotenoid biosynthesis and you make a phylogeny, you can see that the enzyme genes are close to fungi genes. And actually, it was a horizontal transfer from fungi to P. aphis, so that P. aphis are now able to produce their own carotenoids and to have their own color. And you have mutation in one of the genes so that there is a green morph or a red morph, depending on which carotenoid they produce. And what is interesting with this example is that we also see carotenoid production in a two-spotted spider mite, and this is also due to a horizontal transfer of the gene from another fungi species to this particular species. So it occurred many different times. So if you have a piece of DNA which goes through horizontal transfer to another species, in general, it will be lost with time, unless there is an advantage of having this gene, like for example for carotenoid, or unless the piece of DNA can duplicate and multiply in the new host genome. And so this is what occurs for transposable elements. Okay, so transposable elements are pieces of DNA that are able to integrate themselves in other places in on chromosomes. And usually when you have transposable elements, you have many of them per genome. They can cut and insert themselves at multiple sites, and they have endogenous mechanisms to integrate into DNA. Gene drive, on the other hand, usually you have only one pair genome, and it cuts and inserts itself at a specific target site within a genome. So gene drive elements are similar to what are called homing endonuclease elements, which are elements which we have found in nature, in which usually you have one pair genome, which can cut and insert itself at a target site. So it's a mechanism very similar to gene drive. Unfortunately, we don't know the rate of horizontal transfer of homing endonuclease. I mean, there are not so many studies of them. There is one case in which they studied one type of homing endonuclease which targets the COX-1 gene. And in this case, they found that when they studied 165 plant species, they found 70 events of horizontal transfer between species. So still, you can see it's able to migrate to other species quite rapidly. And for transposable elements, we have more data. And for example, in one study where they looked at three closely related species of Drosophila, they looked at many different types of transposable elements, and they found that for a specific type of transposable element, you have about 0.03 events per million years between three species. So this is for the first type of event, so the transfer of a DNA piece to another species. So if you think about the risk of hybridization, so this risk is high, but it involves a few species, okay, only the ones which are closely related to the gene drive. The risk of transfer is relatively low, but it involves many more potential species, and it's much more harder to tackle. And So the risk of that the gene is expressed, okay, so the Cas9 gene and the guide RNA gene are expressed. So here I put you all the different gene drive cassettes which have been published so far. So they are all in Drosophila or in mosquitoes and also in mice. And you can see that usually they use a cis-regulatory element of a germline specific gene for the Cas9 protein. And they use a ubiquitous cis-regulatory element for the guide RNA. And even here they use a human cis-regulatory element. And in general, I mean, when people try to study cis-regulatory element, we can see that the regulatory regions of Drosophila melanogaster or Anopheles, usually they will work in other insects. And mammal cis-regulatory, mouse cis-regulatory regions are usually functioning in other mammals. So here, I mean, this cassette is probably functional also, I mean, can drive expression of the gene in mammals, and the ones in Anopheles and Drosophila probably also work in other insects, and maybe sometimes in other diptera. So once the CRISPR machinery is expressed, then you need to have sites in the genome which can be cut. So here I did a BLAST for the target sequence for the gene drive cassette which was published in Mus musculus. So here, for this experiment, they decided to target tyrosinase gene so that they can see a phenotype on the color of the mouse. And you can see that here, I mean, I did a BLAST with three different types of PAM sequence. Okay, you have N and GG at the end. And you can see that you target the Mus musculus. That's normal. That's expected. But you can also target other mice species. You can also have this site actually in humans. And also, you can find it in amphibians, bony fish. I mean, you find it in many. I mean, it's a okay. It's a 20 nucleotide long sequence, so it's not so frequent, but still, you can find it in many different genomes. Then you need flanking regions for the gene drive cassette to copy itself. So if you think about hybridization to a closely related species, the sequence will likely to be very similar, so this flanking region will be present as close to the target site. And now if we think of another species, this is more rare, but what will happen is that you will have the gene drive cassette which will cut at a specific target site. And if you imagine that this gene drive cassette inserted close to transposable elements, you could have mechanisms which are used by transposable elements which could be used by the gene drive cassette to insert itself at the site which is cut and which is fragile and which will be repaired. Another possibility is that the gene drive cassette inserts in the genome close to regions which are repeats. Okay, so for example, in our genome, we have line elements or transposable elements. And so these repeats are present in many places along the genome. And so it's possible that these sequences are also present flanking the target site of the gene drive cassette. And so then it could be used so that the gene drive cassette will insert exactly at the position where it was cut in. So this scenario is possible, but we don't know how likely it is because we don't know yet the size of the flanking region, how far they should be from the cut site, and the percentage of identity that is required for homology-directed repair. So all these parameters are important to estimate this probability. So this is something which is possible, but I'm not sure it is highly likely. So more studies are required for this. So this is for the flank. Now for the immune system, I mean, I will make it short, but the guide RNA is quite short. It has a short hairpin, which is only 15 base pair, 15 nucleotides. So it will not be recognized by the immune system in insects or in mammals. And then in mammals, I mean, there are new studies which show that there are antibodies against Cas9 which have been found in different populations in humans. So it's possible that some humans are immune to Cas9 expressing cells. But studies are ongoing, and we can see that there are also specific T cells, which are regulatory T cells, which can repress this immune response against Cas9. So it's not so clear. And then the last probability is that the probability that the gene drive, once it's present in one or two individuals, that it will not disappear due to a genetic drift. Okay, and so this probability can be calculated. and it's about 0.5 to up to 0.7, depending on how likely the gene drive can affect the whole gametes. And so in total, if we look at all the parameters, so if you are really thinking negatively on what would be the worst scenario, so then you can imagine that you could have a lot of hybridization events, I mean, with a closely related species. So then, for sure, the gene will be expressed, and the cut site will be present. So then this part will be maybe the one which is less likely. But if you think of a non-target species which has high level of homologous recombination still, this will be quite frequent. And so then you can have a risk of contamination, which could be up to 0.5 per year, which is very likely. But I mean, this is in the worst case scenario. So in conclusion, gene drives, are they good or bad? So they are good in the sense that they can eradicate disease and pest species. And they are less expensive than other methods because you can prepare them in the laboratory and then you release them. They are potentially faster than other methods and potentially more powerful. But they are still under development, so this is why they are still bad. Okay, they can be potentially less efficient than expected. You can have mutations at the target site so that it makes individuals resistant to the gene drive, so they will not work well. You can also have a cryptic species, so if you have populations which do not hybridize, do not mix with the place where you put the new individuals, it will not affect this population, so it could also be a problem. To me, one problem I'm concerned about is that it's an uncontrolled system released in the wild. As I showed you, it can transfer to other species. And also another risk which is very important and which has not been really quantified so far is a risk on ecosystems. If you affect one species, how will it affect other species which are connected to it in ecosystems? So if you want to know more about evaluating the probability of CRISPR gene drive, so you can check our paper on bioarchive. So I would like to thank the people who gave us very good comments on the manuscript. And this study wouldn't have been possible also without discussion with a lot of people, because it involves, as you can see, many different fields in biology. So thank you very much for your attention, and I'd be happy to answer your questions.